Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And together with our colleague, Stephen Slate, we co-wrote the Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
We have a really special guest today. We have one of our new certified coaches, Brianna Thoreau.
Yes. Hi, Brianna.
Hi.
So the reason we're doing this is the Freedom Model is, let me give a little intro here. The Freedom Model is expanding and we're moving past the point where Michelle and I can handle the demand and the worldwide demand. And it's time for us to do what we do best, which is research. And we want to remain sort of the tip of the spear in the helping people with any kind of fetish in the world, problematic fetish. And so whether it's substances, whether it's PMOing, whether it's gambling, shopping, whatever your issue is, the Freedom Model, food, yeah, all of it. And so Brianna will talk about that, I'm sure.
That's why I brought it up.
Yep. So maybe Brianna, you could tell your story a little bit, some background, why, and then how you came across the Freedom Model and why you want to be a part of the movement.
Yes. So I have a history where I grew up with parents that were addicted to substances. And so I have always been around heavy, heavy addiction. And so it's always been fascinating to me. Like I was taken from my mother. And so I wanted to understand if it was because she didn't love me or, so it's always been a super big interest of mine. But I have been working in health and nutrition for the past 15 years. And I switched to eating psychology to understand eating behaviors better because people know what to do, right? They just can't apply it. And so the Freedom Model works on the addiction side of that, right? Like it picks, it plugs right into what I do with eating behaviors. And I found it through my own divorce. I was drinking problematically, heavily through my divorce. And that's how I came across your content. And I came across it right when you guys published, 2017, 2018.
Yeah. If it was 2017, I think we published in November.
In November.
So I said that to Michelle, I think she was one of the first 100 people that got the book.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's cool.
That is cool.
So did you, she froze up a bit. Oh, there you go back. So how did you find it? Because at that point, we didn't do, I don't even know if we're on Amazon.
Remember Stephen had, 2016 was when he did his TED Talk.
Oh, that's true.
When he was talking about writing it then. And so we kind of hit the ground running when we published it because we had already been talking about it.
That's true.
But we didn't start our podcast till 2018 though.
I lived in New York. And so what I think is that it just picked the area up, right?
Yes.
So I actually talked to Stephen and I had sessions with him right in the beginning too.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's how.
Yeah. When I was living in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
So tell the viewers, what is it that you do? Right. So if you have a student that comes in, what's your typical student like? And,
because we want to say Brianna was a coach before she started working with us.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've worked with addiction clients for probably the last 5 years. And that's because the freedom model plugged right in, right? And so I really, yeah, I really wanted to expand out and help people. I think that we help people through teaching like former versions of ourselves, right? I mm-hmm. see myself in people that are struggling so yeah. much, and I just want to like help guide. And so that's what draws me to like coaching. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us what a typical student would be like. So if when you get that call, who is it? What's the profile? And because the reason I want to do this is we now have a few coaches, right? We're going to, and more signing up. And so we want to match the typical person. Of course, this isn't, you know, we don't need to pigeonhole anybody, but, yeah. but give us an idea.
But each yeah. coach has a different specialty.
That's right.
Right? So,
that's
right. Yeah.
I do a vast array, but most of my demographic is like 40 plus. Usually they've been very, very successful in life. Those are usually the people that I draw in. And they have like these soul crushing, like addictions or habits, yeah. like behavioral things, but every other part of their life usually looks idealistic, right?
Yeah.
So that's usually the demographic I get. I get some younger people too. But mostly it's that demographic.
Well, that's an important demographic because it's like a forgotten demographic, because ultimately when people go to get help for something, everything now is about, you know, uncovering what's going on in your life that's causing you to do this, and you're wanting to escape. And so people go down this road of looking for a reason other than the obvious, right? I mean, is that what you yep. found? Yeah.
Yep. And so a lot of this started too. The reason why I really pushed over into addiction is because most people with food issues, like, they know what to do, but it's usually with more questioning, I find out that they're like drinking a bottle of wine every night, or they're taking pills, or they're taking yes. stimulants to get their work done, like excessively. Yeah. I don't think there's a problem with moderate use of anything, right?
Right.
It's just when it's causing too many negative, like yeah. negatives in their life that they want to address it. So usually that's how it started, is like I was working with people with their nutrition and their fitness and their health. And I would find all these, like, almost everyone has like this thing, something, right?
Yeah. The Achilles heel. So it's really interesting, because we would have people at the retreats when we ran residential retreats back in the day, and, they would have these massive, massive drug problems and alcohol problems that were spilling out into their life, right? They were hiding it, and it was spilling out, so they had to do something about it. And then we would invariably find out their background, and they'd be like, you know, a super health guru, you know, really high-level executives. And
high achievers.
And so it was hilarious, because they'd come in and they'd be like, listen, I have a very specific diet. Meanwhile, they were like banging heroin and living on Popeye's chicken for the last 8 weeks. And all of a sudden, you know, so do you find that as well?
Yep. It's an obsession with like all organic food, getting their workouts in still. I was the same way. I was very, very much put together. Get up, I would do my workout every morning. I ate all organic. I was writing about nutrition. I was teaching about nutrition, but I was still drinking excessively at night, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same. It's just, so I really understand that all or nothing mindset, I think, better than most, because I'm wired up like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really important, because, that whole all or nothing thing is such a trap.
Yeah.
You know, you can pull yourself into such a brutal, brutal life that way. And you know, it's weird, because life really is a giant sea of gray. You know, it's all about compromise and figuring out, especially like in marriages, in relationships, at work, dealing with a difficult boss, all these things. If you have that all or nothing or black and white engineering mind, that's another type of mindset that I see a personality type where if somebody is really mm-hmm. geared towards facts and everything needs to be just so, they have a hard time in life, man.
For sure.
And that can work in an office place. That can work in the lab. But you get home and it doesn't work with kids. It doesn't work with a wife or, you know, a spouse.
No, I'm very, that's what drew me to your work initially anyway, is because it's very evidence-based and my brain works that way. I need facts like listed out.
Yeah.
That's why I was not like, I never was interested in any 12 step for any problem I've ever had because it was too like esoteric woo woo. Like it just wasn't going to work for me. Ever.
Yeah. Did you ever go to AA or NA or anything? Never.
No, never. Never.
How did you know it didn't? So were you introduced to it?
I think I'm very self-aware and I know that I'm very, I do not like rules. And if you tell me to do something, like I'm going to do the opposite. And they have a lot of rules, right? I've known that about myself since I was young.
Yep. The difference with me though, I'm the same way, but the difference with me is I didn't mind picking a fight.
Yeah.
So I went to AA and just picked a lot of fights.
That would have been me.
Yeah. I'm not a rule follower either, but I still fell into it because I thought it was what I was supposed to do.
You grew up in it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. When you talked about your parents having their own problems, they obviously didn't go there, I'm assuming.
No. So everyone in my family, including my grandparents that both drank excessively, all just decided one day they were done. All of them, even like my mom who did methamphetamines very heavily, just decided one day she was done.
Like, so they're part of the majority.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is if you told people that, they'd be like, oh, that doesn't happen. When it's actually the norm. It's actually how most people do it.
That's all I saw. So thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, now that makes sense then as to why you weren't attracted to, you know, the sort of 12-step paradigm. And did you know, I'm just curious, did you know anything about the 12 steps, like, did you know what they were? And
yes. So I started my writing on, there's a lot of talk about like food addiction, right? And overeating anonymous. Oh, yeah. They've turned everything into 12 steps now. Yep, and so I'm very, very familiar with their steps and their model.
I see.
It's just antithetical to like the releasing power verbiage was antithetical to my internal locus of control, like mode through life, right?
Right.
That's very much how I am and how I operate. And the freedom model fits right into that. Like that's what gives lasting change, in my opinion, with the freedom model is that it enables an internal locus of control.
Yeah. So it brings the individual back into the whole equation, which is literally missing in just about every model that's out there. It's really wild what has happened, how people have no idea that they have their own mind. Like they have their own thoughts, and yet they discount them as if they, that whole factor doesn't even come into the equation.
It's just biology. They think it's just biology. And especially with eating, I think they think that, you know, there's so much out there. And OA never made sense to me. Like I did not understand how that would even work. Like thinking that you're powerless over food.
Yeah. And yep.
Talk about doomsday.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So I wrote a big long piece around a decade ago. It's called Moderation is a Flawed Concept, but I go over like Overeaters Anonymous and whatever. Like it's such a like just biological, like you have no control over your hands. Like, and so a lot of my premise was like, you have control over your hands. Like, you have thoughts inside of your head. And so this was like before I found the freedom model. I was like writing about that.
That's awesome.
That's really interesting. So let's talk about how is food in what you teach, how is food different? Is it different than substances? So I guess that's the question there are nuances between these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I look at it, food addiction, or what I don't like the word addiction, but we're going to use it.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just, it's a behavioral, maladaptive behavior, the overeating is. So I see it as the same thing as like a gambling addiction or a porn addiction, right?
Yeah.
It fits in that same bucket. You do still have to eat food, right? You can't abstain. And so that's why the 12 steps never made sense, right?
Yeah. I asked that question. I'm like, how can you
still have to eat?
Yeah.
But I now I look at it as all of that's like that. Like I don't, all substances fit in the same category as like, I mean, I can have them if I want, but I don't want a lot of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. There isn't that much of a difference between the food and substances when you factor in moderation, right? If you go into a sort of this, what we talk about in the book with adjusted use, right? Just adjusting the power or the idea that I am free to be able to choose and adjust however I want to. And anything I think that is outside the realm of I'm making the choice, anything that's outside that realm gets hinky because substances and food and these behaviors, they don't have a soul of their own. And that, I don't know why that's missed. I think the way we talk about things, you know, like alcohol's got me.
Yeah.
Right? It's got me. Well, how does it have you? You know?
Yeah. I worked with a woman recently, and so I wanted to get your take on this. I worked with a woman recently who was allergic to a certain food, and she just kept eating that food. Like on purpose. Now she and I kind of figured it out what was going on, but like, have you had that experience where like somebody's lactose intolerant and they just keep eating, you know, ice cream and
or so it's usually due to faulty beliefs, kind of like the freedom model. There's those, I think it's like 15, the myths around there's myths around food too. They think it's like serving them in some way. And so what I do when I coach is I figure that out. Like what do you feel like it's giving you? Like, and usually it takes a while to get that out of them because they start the same way. Like, it's not doing anything. I hate it. It's ruining my life. It's killing me. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spent 3 hours in the bathroom afterwards and I'm in pain and it's terrible. And that's the hardest part to work through, is to kind of, you know, let them set aside how mad they are at themselves.
And so a lot of initially too, it's like a compulsive like behavior, right? You know, like riding a bike, we just learned how to ride a bike and it becomes like second nature. Well, some of these like eating behaviors or just like picking the drink up and drinking it, like, is just a habit. And so you do, like what I talk to them about is you do have to be more aware in the beginning of your actions. Mindful is the word I use, like mindful of like where your hands are going.
Yeah.
But eventually it fades, it's pruned out, right?
Yeah.
The neuroplasticity. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really interesting that you said something about it serving them.
Yep.
So the whole premise for the viewers out there, and there might be some new people listening, chapter 7 in our book, we go through the positive drive principle, which is that human beings are always, and I mean always, moving in the direction of what they believe benefits them personally at that moment. So from the way I'm sitting to the way you're sitting, everything that we're doing right now, if we felt there was something more beneficial to us personally, we would be doing that. Mm-hmm. But we don't believe that. That's why we're here doing this. So when you take that premise and you apply it, I think that's such a massive key. And what you said is, if I can get that person to figure out how it serves them, here's my question. Do you think that what is the biggest impediment to them understanding what it is that they're doing to themselves? Would you say it's guilt?
And shame. I think that the shame is the biggest reason why they can't actually like self-identify. Yes. I think they're just like beating themselves with shame all the time. So they need someone to come in and tell them they're not bad. Like, you're not bad. This, we can figure this out. A lot of people with the food stuff, they've been binging for so long that they're on the brink of like, they just want to end it all. Like they're, it's just not, it's a very dark place to be in. Same with any addiction, but food gets there too. And so it's just telling them they are a good person and we will figure this out, giving them hope, inspiration, and taking the shame language away. I think that's the number one thing.
Yeah. And I think too, one of the hard things, and you can say if you've seen this, I'm sure working with people with food, it's being able to see immediate benefits versus it feels like it's so far away.
Oh, yeah. That's such a trap. The love that I have to wait all this time
to see the benefits of exercising daily, to see the benefit, which you don't, you really don't. And so how do you help people to make that shift?
I frame it as, so I know what the benefits are for me. And so I try to give them the language because a lot of these people don't have the language to tie to what feels good, especially if they've been drinking or doing something for a long period of time. They don't know what it feels like to feel good.
That's so true. That's a great
point. And so I give them the language and what they are going to feel like. Like I paint a picture, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That's great. It's mental rehearsal is important too. And, you know, I was an athlete growing up in high school and college. And so I can remember one of the things I was a pitcher, a softball pitcher, and mental rehearsal was really important. And we did that a lot that was in the 80s. And we already knew about that stuff.
Oh yeah.
And the same happened with me for volleyball and, you know, like the mental rehearsal of serving and setting and all that like was huge. And so to be able, you can take that and you can use it in just about anything. And some people respond very well to it. Like envisioning, Mark used to have people do that, like envisioning who do you want to be? What do you want your life to look like, you know, tomorrow and a year down the line or whatever.
Yeah. And so what I did too, when I was changing my detrimental drinking behavior is I would envision myself as living in integrity. Being in integrity is like my biggest motivator. Like I do not like feeling like there's like a dichotomy between.
Yes.
Right.
So that was like who I envisioned is someone that was living in integrity.
You know, that's so funny because when I was first getting my life together, I remember, I don't know if it was your father or somebody asked me, you know, if you were to summarize what drove you to change your life, what would it be? And I, you know, I never really thought that I cared about what my parents thought about me because I didn't have a close relationship with them, but I did desire their affection and their acceptance like crazy because I wasn't loved by them. And it did bother me that my father looked at me incessantly with disappointment because I was such a fuck up. I was just, a relief seeking missile. I was a miserable, crazy kid. And, one of the things that really inspired me to change was I wanted my dad to look at me and be proud of me. Just a simple thing like that. I really, really craved that. And I did eventually achieve that in a big way. We ended up really respecting each other and it was wonderful. So I got lucky that way, but it was a driving force. And I can remember when we were writing the book, Steve said to me, we had gotten through all the mechanics of mythology and the research stuff. And then Steve looked at me and goes, man, you used to write a bunch of stuff about moving on and envisioning a better future. He goes, that stuff matters too, Mark. And I had a ton written at that time about it kind of in the background. And that's when we sprinkled that in because you really do have to have some personal drive to be better.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a big, like a big missing piece for a lot of people. They get stuck in these like depressive loops too, yeah, where nothing is going to be better. Like it's all doomed. Like,
well, and especially if they start thinking, oh, I'm going to have to like watch what I eat all the time. Yes. I'm going to have to, you know, count my drinks, or it's always going to feel like deprivation. And, you know, so when Mark really hit on like the positive drive and shifting your beliefs about certain things, like I always use an example with people about comfort food, right? Like there's this idea that there's certain foods that bring comfort, which is no different than thinking that, you know, my glass of wine every night brings me comfort. And then I remember saying to somebody, you know, what are comfort foods? And they're like, oh, mac and cheese and mashed potatoes. And I'm like, you know what my comfort food is? It is chicken broth. Like I shifted that. And when I'm not feeling well, that's the only thing that I want is chicken broth.
And then what you did is you changed it from comfort food to really a factual basis.
Yeah.
So you got rid of the mythology of the bullshit marketing.
Right.
By the carb industry.
Right. To chicken broth when you're sick, like
literally works.
Literally hydrates you.
And yes.
Like, yeah. It's genuinely makes you feel better.
Exactly. It's all subjective. Like, and so that's why finding out what like stories, we are storytellers, right? And so yeah, sure, we attach like stories to all of this, like our comfort food, like it's the story about the smell and what our mom made or whatever. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be that way. Like you can change the story, rewrite all of them. And then you never feel like deprived. Like I never feel deprived. Like if I want something, I'll have it. But most of the time I just understand like my trade-offs and
yes,
worth it.
That yeah, is a huge thing, the trade-offs. That's like when we talked about there's a chapter in the book that where Stephen talks about owning a big house.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like that was Stephen, right?
Yes.
Who wrote that part?
Yeah.
And both of us at the time, like as we're reading through it, and Stephen lived in an apartment in New York, right? And we had big houses in the country.
Yeah.
And all the trade-offs that he talked about in there were like, yeah, why do we have big houses?
It actually was instrumental in us selling our homes. We sold them.
It was. Now I
love that example.
Yeah.
You whittle it down.
So where do you see your coaching going? So is this something that you love to do? And where do you see it going in the future?
I absolutely love helping people with the pain point, like I was talking about earlier, like that is where I felt my darkest. Like I felt like there was no hope or anything. And I really want to help that version of myself over and over again. Like that's where my coaching is going to be. That's where I see myself. And that's where my knowledge base is helping that version of feeling hopeless, like give them hope and change their entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you love people.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's people.
Kind of a prerequisite for coaching.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
I've lived through a lot of different like life experiences. So I like hold no judgment about anything. Just because I've been through so much and seen so much that nothing shocks me at this point. So I think I'm very well equipped to be like a coach.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, and I'm going to tell the viewers this, that she wouldn't be with us here if we didn't believe in her. And I had the privilege of working, and so did Michelle, privately doing some coaching with her, like in training. And Brianna's ready to rock and roll. She's got a lot of experience. And I do think that we've always looked for coaches that have life experience.
For sure.
You know, because I don't know if you really can be fully non-judgmental and fully loving towards people unless you've experienced what they've experienced, you know, at some level.
Yeah, you can't relate.
Yeah, it's hard.
I can definitely relate to a vast array of issues.
Yeah, you can. You can, because I heard your experiences and I was like, oh, I didn't know any of this stuff about her. So yeah, it's going to be awesome. So if any people are out there, do you have anything else to say before I tie this up?
No, I thought this was fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Of course. Tell people how they can find you, other than you can find her at thefreedommodel.org, but I know you have your own website as well.
Yes, BriannaTheroux.com. And
super easy.
Yep. And you can find me across all social media at that name, Lift Heavy, Breathe Easy on Instagram. That's the only different handle.
Okay. I'm going to have, like, below this, the podcast episode, we're going to have links to be able to find Brianna.
Yeah. And she'll be in our directory. She's in our directory now. And I think we're just getting your website set up and stuff.
Like the Freedom Model part of it.
Yeah.
Model page.
Yep. And I think when we launch this, we'll have the link and everything rolling, and you'll have your portion on your website done. I think that's how we're going to time this.
That is how we're doing it.
That way, if people hear this and they want to get a hold and get it, they can do it. Yep.
It'll be easy. Thank you so much for talking with us today. And stick around, because we'll talk after.
All right, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Look, at if you are interested in becoming a certified Freedom Model coach, you can go to thefreedommodel.org/certification. If you're interested in getting coaching from one of our certified coaches, go to thefreedommodel.org/coaching.
All right, everybody. Take care.
Thank you so much.